Thank you for being here this morning. Appreciate the way that you have all worshiped God. And as we go into our study of His Word, may we keep in mind the things that will be said, and may we seek to always glorify God in everything that we do. The story of Joseph does not begin as how one would imagine, based on how it ended. Joseph's life as a young adult was quite the experience, to say the least. For 13 years, Joseph suffered three major trials that would determine the outcome of his fate, how far he would go, how much he would grow, and where he would all end up at the end of all of that. I want to talk to you this morning for a period of time on the trials of Joseph, these three trials that he went through. And over the course of these trials, these tumultuous circumstances, he would either be broken or he would be built up. What does the Bible tell us about how Joseph dealt with these trials? If you have your Bibles, I would like you to open with me to Genesis 37. Genesis chapter 37. The first half of this lesson will be primarily from the book of Genesis. And now, because Joseph's three trials occurs over the course of three chapters, and those chapters are lengthy, we won't be reading it all. Instead, I will be giving you a brief summary of what takes place and how Joseph deals with all of them. Number one, detested and sold into Egyptian slavery. That was the first trial Joseph went through. He was detested and he was sold into Egyptian slavery. And we read of that in Genesis 37, beginning in verse 1. And the first of these trials, this first trial, takes place when Joseph is only 17 years old. We're told that he is the favorite child of his father Jacob, and the rest of his brothers hated him because of that. Now, there were 12 of them. And Joseph was the second youngest. He was a son of Rachel, whom Jacob loved. He was Jacob's favorite son. Joseph was the favorite. But more than that, whenever the other 11 would do something bad, he would go and tell on them. And if you want to know the quickest way to get your siblings to dislike you, to get them to hate you, you go tell on them. And that's what Joseph would do. He would tell on his brothers to his parents. They don't like him. But beyond that, Joseph has a dream. The first dream we observe in Genesis 37. And in this dream, which is an interesting dream to say the least, he tells it to his brothers. They're out in the fields, all right? And they're working. There were farm guys into agriculture. And in this dream, Joseph says, I saw 11 sheaves. And what a sheaf was, it's a bundle of grain stalks. You would bundle it up, tie it up. He says, I saw that your sheaves, your 11 sheaves, Joseph says to his brothers, they were all bowing down to my sheaf. And as Joseph relayed this dream to them, the Bible tells us that they hated him even more. And that dream would signify something to the extent that at some point in the future, that his brothers would be in a lesser role to him. Now, in the ancient Near East, that was not the case. That was unheard of. Usually, it was the oldest brother. He had the birthright, the first blessing, and he would be in control. He would be in charge. But it is reversed in chapter 37 according to Joseph's dream. As the second youngest, he would be in charge. He would be in control. And the rest of his brothers would bow down to him. If your siblings told you something like that, would you like it? You're going to serve me. Doesn't sound right, does it? And so they hate him even more than they did in the beginning. And if that wasn't bad enough, I mean, you got tensions rising in the family. Maybe you only have one or two siblings in your family. Can you imagine 11 brothers? 11 men. That's not an ideal circumstance to be living in. And so he's got two strikes against him already. He is the favorite. He tells on them. And he has this weird dream in which they're bowing down to him. Well, here comes strike three, right? A second dream he has. And in this dream, in Genesis 37, the Bible tells us that Joseph sees the sun, moon, and 11 stars bowing down before him. And he tells it this time to not only his brothers, but to his father, Jacob. And Jacob asks him, are we all supposed to serve you? But the Bible tells us that Jacob kept these things in mind. He wasn't quick to hate his own son as his brothers did. But in the eyes of his brothers, this was it. Strike three, you're out, Joseph. You are the favorite. You've had this first dream and now you tell us this. So they're jealous and they hate him even more. And so at the first opportunity they get, they plot to kill him. They plot to kill their own brother. But Reuben, the oldest, the firstborn, he tries to talk some sense into him. He says, I don't like that plan. It's a little bit too violent. It's too extreme, guys. Let's figure something else out. And so they throw him down in a pit in the meantime, and Reuben apparently has to go tend to his sheep. And meanwhile, he's gone. The other 10 brothers are eating, and Joseph's down in this pit. And they see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming. And they say to themselves, why should we kill our brother if we can sell him and get some money out of it? How much do you have to hate your own family that your concern is for the money that you would get for your own flesh and blood? And they don't hesitate. They bring him out of the pit and they sell him to these Ishmaelites. And in turn, these Ishmaelites sell him into Egyptian slavery. The brothers have gotten their wish that they would rid themselves of this dreamer, they call him. They don't even refer to him by his first name. I need you to notice that. They call him this dreamer, that dreamer. When you refer to somebody by anything but their first name, you know it's not good. And they sell him, and at the ripe age of 17... Joseph finds himself at the mercy of Egyptians. Most 17-year-olds I know are planning their life. They're thinking about college. Maybe who they're going to marry. Things of that nature. Joseph's got much bigger problems. He may die in Egypt. Because of his brothers. And he hasn't done anything inherently wrong, by the way. All he had to do was dream two dreams and be the favorite, and that wasn't even in his control. That was Jacob's fault. But in Egypt, he finds himself at their mercy. He was detested and sold into Egyptian slavery. Number two. Genesis 39, turn a couple pages over. Genesis 39. Joseph, in trial number two, was falsely accused and thrown into prison. But I want to tell you, the Bible tells us in Genesis 39, in verse 1, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites. So he was taken in and he is now the slave of somebody. But the Bible tells us that the Lord was with Joseph. Despite what must have been, and I cannot imagine as a 17-year-old kid what it must have been like, first of all, to be hated by your own brothers, to be cast down into this pit. You're almost on the chopping block. But by the grace of your oldest brother, you're saved from that. But you're not by any means out of the neck of the woods. You're sold into slavery. And now you're at the mercy of some Egyptians. You are a slave. Can you imagine what's going on in the mind of Joseph? But despite all that, the Bible tells us that God was with him. And he prospered in Egypt. Maybe just for a second things are looking up, right? His master recognized that God was with him. And so he put him in charge of his entire household. He would be, as we call it, the second in command of his household, Potiphar's house. And everything prospered. Everything was going well. But the devil doesn't give up, does he? Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with Joseph. She was attracted to him because he was a handsome man. And the Bible tells us that on occasion after occasion, she sought to seduce Joseph to commit adultery with him. Just when things were looking up, there is the devil. Trial number two. But Joseph says this in Genesis chapter 39. I want you to pay attention to what Joseph says. There is no one greater in this house than I, and my master has withheld nothing from me except you. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? Joseph does not say sin against him, he says sin against God. Joseph repeatedly refuses her advances, not only on this occasion, but the Bible tells us that she keeps after him. She kept looking for him. Maybe, just maybe, she could break him down. But Joseph said, I'm not going to have it. Joseph withstood temptation. He said, I'm not going to commit this great evil against my God. But I want to ask you a question. What has God done for Joseph so far in the eyes of us readers that he would be serving God this way? Not that much. He is 17. He is sold into slavery. I mean, that'd be enough for anybody in this world to say, see you, God. You aren't doing anything for me. Why should I serve you? I mean, things have been more bad than they are good so far for Joseph. But yet, his faith in God, strong. And he says, I am not going to sin against God. Well, on one occasion, Potiphar's wife gets her way. And Joseph is alone in the house, and this is it. So she goes and she grabs him by his tunic, and she says, you're going to sleep with me. And Joseph doesn't even take time to mull it over. His immediate reaction is that he runs away as fast as he can. And I want to tell you, there's probably no more uplifting passage in the book of Genesis than that. Because over and over again, we observe this guy sinned and this guy did evil and this guy didn't hesitate to give in to that temptation. But here you have Joseph. He is hated by his 11 brothers. He is sold into slavery by the skin of his teeth. He escapes death. And besides all that, here you have this woman that wants to sleep with Joseph. I'm sure she was beautiful. But he refused. He said, I am not going to commit evil against God. And he runs away as fast as he can. Because he has made a resolve that he will not fail God. And so she gets caught with the tunic in her hand, and Joseph's gone. He's out of there. And so she thinks quickly on her feet. She says, oh, I got to cover this up. And so Potiphar gets home, and she tells all the guys in the house, Joseph did it. He was trying to take me by force. He was trying to take advantage of me. And Potiphar hears of it, and he doesn't like it, and so he throws Joseph into prison. Joseph finds himself in a familiar position once again, having been repaid evil for the good that he has done. He has done nothing but good for Potiphar. Potiphar's house has thrived. It has grown well. But here's Joseph, not doing anything wrong. He finds himself in prison. Despite this, in Genesis 39, verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Once again, God is still with him. Trial number two finds its conclusion with Joseph in prison. Number three, Genesis chapter 40. Joseph delivers help, but in turn he is ignored and forgotten. Ignored and forgotten. While in prison, Joseph encounters two servants of Pharaoh. They had done wrong to their master. We don't know to what extent and how bad it was, but we're told that one guy is a cup bearer to the king, and the other is a baker, the chief baker. And the two of these guys are in prison, and on one day, one occasion, Joseph finds them in prison, and he sees that they have sad faces on them. And you know what Joseph's first thought is? The first thing that enters his mind? How can I help these men? If there is a single person in this audience today, after having been sold into slavery and being thrown into prison, that would first seek to help others rather than to help yourself out of that situation, raise your hand. You're innocent. You haven't done anything wrong. But yet your first thought is to help your neighbor, to help Egyptians, and you're Hebrew. If that does not show faith and trust in God, I do not know what does, my friends. Do we have that kind of love for our neighbors? And Joseph finds out that they have had some troubling dreams. And Joseph says, do not interpretations to dreams belong to God? He's happy about this. Joseph is ecstatic that he has the opportunity to help, even though everything that could go wrong has been going wrong for him. And so the cupbearer tells Joseph his dream first, and Joseph relays the interpretation. Joseph says, you're going to be restored to your king. But Joseph adds a little bit to that. He says, only remember me when you're restored. Don't forget me. Remember that I did this favor for you, so you do one for me when you get back to the king. And Joseph tells him, I am innocent and I am in here not because of anything that I have done. Just remember me. Is that too much to ask? And the baker comes, his turn, and the baker tells him what his dream was. And Joseph relays the dream, and unfortunately for him, wasn't that good. Joseph says, you're going to be killed. And he was killed. And guess what? The cupbearer was restored to Pharaoh. But in Genesis chapter 40, in verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. And he forgot him. You know, in baseball, there's three strikes. And what does the umpire say? You're out. I want to tell you, the trials that Joseph has gone through, these three trials are not a small thing. These are the kinds of things that really test a man's resolve to even live. Can I say that again? These are the kinds of circumstances that forces one to think about whether or not they really want to keep living. This is not easy for anybody. Poor guy has done nothing wrong. He has held his faith strong and secure to God. He says, I'm not going to sin against my Lord. Even though things haven't been going good for him. Remember, this is a young man. He is 17 when it all begins. And he's into his young 20s and he thinks maybe it's going to turn around. This is his entire life here. Most of us as adults, we begin our lives that will pave the way for the future when we're what? In our 20s. And you know where Joseph's spending it? In prison, languishing, and people forgetting him for the good that he's done for them. But God was with Joseph. And he is repaid wrong for all the good that he's done. Those are the three trials. That is a succinct, concise version of them. Now I want to share with you three major lessons that we can learn from these trials of Joseph. Three major lessons. And the first one is this. The nature of trials. The nature of trials. The first characteristic in that nature of trials is that it can make us bitter. Have you ever been in a circumstance that you've never been before in your life and you felt that there was just no way out, that this was unfair to you? The whole world is against you, and you have the biggest chip on your shoulder. And you feel like you've been repaid evil for all the good that you've done. Just like that, you can be bitter in a moment's notice. But I want to tell you, friends, that trials do not determine the outcome of our lives. Trials do not have that power. You do. And I do. Joseph went through it three times in consecutive order, separated only by one chapter that talked about his older brother Judah that did wrong to him. Judah was the one that said, "Let's sell him for the money." Three consecutive trials, but guess what? He would not let those trials determine the outcome of his life. Joseph says, "I'm going to serve God. And I don't care if things aren't looking up for me now. I know they will be looking up for me when I'm with him in heaven." Trials do not get to decide the outcome of our lives. We do. And I'm not saying that it's easy at all. No, it's difficult. It is hard. It will determine how we deal with these things, will determine how far we go and how much we will grow. We have that power. The ability to decide whether that trial or this trial or whatever trial in life will overcome us or we will overcome it. Joseph is not the only example, by the way, of overcoming trials in the scriptures. You know another guy by the name of Job. And just as Job is at his highest, the pinnacle of life, he's got everything. But more than anything, he's got God on his side. And Satan walks around the earth and Satan says to God, "Does Job fear God for nothing?" In other words, he says, "The only reason Job's serving you, God, is because of everything that you've given him." God says, "Oh, really? Take everything that he has, and we'll see about that." And the Bible tells us that Job said these words, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Could you do that? If your kids were removed from you, all your children, all your grandchildren, your house was foreclosed upon, your car was sold, everything that you had was taken away, but all that you had left was your life and God, could you say, "Blessed be the name of the Lord"? Trials can come from Satan. And I want to tell you, He does not let up. You see how Potiphar's wife kept coming after him over and over again? She would not let up. She was seeking to make this guy suffer any way that she could. And you might be saying, but what is so suffering? What is so bad about that? Sin wants you to believe that it will make good on its promises. It says you're going to be satisfied and you're going to have the fullest of your pleasures. But it never tells you that the pain and the consequences that you will have to suffer afterwards is far greater than anything you can ever imagine. And the second characteristic is about trials, the nature of trials. It can make us better. It doesn't have to make us bitter. The only person that's between that and the trial and making them bitter is us, is you, is me. Everybody in this world. But it can make us better. And, I don't like to use these phrases if I don't have to, but I will this time. We all have heard about the glass with water, and it's halfway filled. And depending on who you talk to, you have the kind of people that will say, well, that glass is half empty. And we describe those people as the pessimistic, negative kinds of people. They only look at the bad side of things. And then you have those on the other side of the aisle. They say, well, that glass is half full. They look at the optimistic outcomes, how things can change for the better. What I want to tell you, friends, when it comes to trials, we have to be those optimistic kinds. Because only that outlook is going to help us overcome. And we have to look at trials with the mindset that it will make us better. Joseph was pushed to the edge. He got it. He was tested. He was beaten down and Satan tried his best to break him down, but Joseph held on to his resolve. That is what? I will not let go of God. I cannot do this evil against God. He could have easily chosen to give it up. He could have easily lost his resolve, lose heart, and curse God and die. In Job chapter 2, when Job has everything removed from him, all that he has left is his faith to God and his wife. Here comes the devil. And she says, why do you still cling to God and hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. Job said, you speak like a foolish woman. God has given me everything that I have, and he can take it away. My business, my goal, is to serve him. He chose to persevere. Job and Joseph chose to persevere, endure, and grow. But I also want to tell you this, that trials can, listen to me, trials can and sometimes will come from God. And I want to make myself very clear, these are not temptations. Trial and temptation are two different things. The Bible tells us in James 1, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God does not tempt anyone, and he himself cannot be tempted. God tempts no one. But he does sometimes send trials our way. Why? In James chapter 1 at verse 2, my brethren, consider it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And endurance, when it has run its full course, will leave you complete, lacking in nothing. How many of us have went to school and taken a test that we just did not want to take? That was a trial. We wanted nothing to do with that test. We didn't want to study for it. We didn't want to sit down and take it. But maybe, just maybe, after taking it and passing it, you feel good about yourself. You feel like next time you can take that test and maybe something more difficult than that test. Don't you feel like that? Well, of course you do. Why? Because your faith has just grown a step. People that exercise and are going to the gym constantly, they know about this stuff. The moment your resolve breaks, that's it. But you know that that pain that you're going to feel for a while, you know that's not going to last forever. And the moment you look at that mirror and you see results, you think, I can do that and even more the next time. You've built confidence and you've built endurance. God tested Abraham. Did you know that? God sent a trial Abraham's way. And that trial was that he would sacrifice his son. He would have to kill his son. And Abraham took that knife and he was about to kill his boy. And God said, stop. I know that I'm number one in your life. Can God say that about us? When he sends trials our way, are we that half empty kind of person, or do we look at that glass and we say it's half filled? Trials can come. It can make us bitter, or it can make us better. You have the power to decide which it will be. Number two, lessons that we learn from Joseph's trials. God cares for his people. He watches over his people. If you've lost your family, like Joseph did, if all you remember about your family is that they hate you, they're dead to you then. You're dead to them and they're dead to you. What do you have left in life? Well, you have God. You have God.